You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello everyone, Rob Guest from football.london here, and welcome to the latest episode of Golden Guest Talk Tottenham, sponsored by NordVPN. Joining me as ever, it's Alistair Gold. Ali, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm running on fumes a little bit because I made the slightly daft decision to stay up and watch the Super Bowl last night, which then went into overtime. So sleep wasn't much of an option last night for me, but it's fine. Talking about Tottenham will keep me going, and the adrenaline will see me through because, yeah, we've got a really exciting, dramatic victory to talk about. And I think a lot of the knock-on effects and what it means for various players, Postecoglou, and a lot more.
Yeah, it very much was the late, late show at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Saturday. We've seen a number of late goals in N17 already this season, and it was Brennan Johnson, 96-minute winner, to get Tottenham a 2-1 win over Brighton. It looked like it was going to finish a 1-1 draw, with Spurs just not really creating much in those final 15 or 20 minutes, but brilliant piece of play from, I think it was James Maddison, Richarlison and Son. Son on his return to the team. What a ball across the face of goal for Brennan Johnson, who just had the simple job of tapping it in.
It was a world-class ball, that across. I mean, that was how Postecoglou referred to it. And I think in the moment, I just kind of thought, oh, that's good. He's slung it across. That's a decent pass. And then I've watched it from various angles. The kind of precision required to get it right onto Brennan Johnson's foot is just remarkable. I mean, it's a good run from Brennan Johnson. He's done exactly what they want him to do. He's got in there. But my word, that is what, you know, Spurs have missed with Sonny being away. That is that ridiculous level of quality that he brings to the team in those big kind of important moments. And yeah, it was a brilliant goal. That was the irony of it, is the kind of football that I think Postecoglou had been tearing his hair out through the game trying to get from his team. And they pull it out in the biggest of moments, right when they needed it. And you know, it needs to be, I guess, a lesson in itself for them that the Postecoglou football will bring the results for them. They've just got to trust it even more. I think they kind of do, or we felt they have, but I do feel that at times during matches, in last couple recently, they've just been getting away from it a little bit. And this was another kind of example that it pays big dividends for them. And in front of that South Stand as well. I feel like every time I'm sat in that press box and there's something big happens at the end, I'm turning right. George Sessions from PA said that to me. He said, don't you feel like we're always looking to the right when there's a big moment happens late in a Spurs game? And it is. There seems to be, I don't know whether it's deliberate or not. It probably is, from like when they're kind of doing the toss at the start of a game deciding who kind of goes at which end, whether you presumably you would always try to pick to head towards that game, that end of the stadium, you know, in the second half, because purely for moments like that. James Maddison was going on about that stand and the noise that comes from it and what it's like to celebrate in front of it when you get a moment like that, although he was too knackered to even make it to the celebrations, he admitted. It was a brilliant goal. Like you say, the four Sons involved, Maddison, Richarlison, Son and Johnson. Sounds weird to say. And fantastic end to a game, which I think on the balance of play, they deserved to win. I thought Brighton played very well, but I would say they did so without much threat. That's the only thing I would say. They obviously had a couple of shots early on from Welbeck and Matoma, scored their penalty, which was essentially Spurs gifting them the ball with a silly kind of bit of play from both Bentancur and Van de Ven. But then after that, I'm trying to remember if Vicario had another save to make. I don't think he did. Whereas Spurs had 16 shots at goal. I think Brighton had 6, I think it was. So, yeah, I would say on the balance of play, Spurs deserved it. But it still wasn't quite the fluent performance that you know, we want to see at this stage in the season. And to be fair to Postecoglou, he keeps saying this to the players. It's all very well saying we've got all our star players back, or the big names, we've got the good players back and all this sort of stuff. Not saying the players before were rubbish, but it was more he's able to rotate and the competition's there. But they can't rely on that. They've still got to go out and do the job. They've actually got to show why they're the good players. They're the players that should be starting games. And I felt like only a couple of them really shone on Saturday. But ultimately, they got the job done.
Yeah, they did. I thought Spurs just edged it as well.
Yeah.
I think if it was a draw, you'd go, right, fair enough, fair result maybe. Just watching it back, though, thought Brighton probably had the better of the game for the first 30 minutes or so. Yeah. And then probably after the substitutions as well, that triple Spurs. Yeah. Sub.
It didn't really work, the subs to begin with. It was interesting.
I think Spurs were okay for a few minutes after, but you'd thinking it would just give him a further boost to go on and get that second goal, but that didn't prove to be the case up until the 96th minute. But nah, Brighton are a good team, aren't they? I mean, let's be honest, it's about what,
very good team.
Six, 7 weeks ago since we're at the Amex and scored four against Spurs. And
yeah,
in all honesty, could have scored more than four that day. Absolutely. Because we've not seen a team cut Spurs to ribbons like Brighton did. They were very, very impressive. So to claim 3 points against Brighton, it's big. It's big in the top four battle. And then in Ange's press conference on Friday, one of the talking points was conceding that late goal at Everton. Spurs have conceded a number of late goals throughout the season. But he did also mention, yeah, we might concede late goals, but we also score late goals just because of the style of football, and that proved to be the point.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some people kind of took that quite badly. I saw on social media they weren't happy with that quote, but I kind of understood what he means. And there is a certain irony that last season we were all, and previous seasons, we were all bemoaning the fact that Spurs would sit back late in games, invite pressure on themselves and concede just obvious predictable goals that we kind of knew were coming. Whereas now Spurs have got a manager who's like, I absolutely want to do the opposite of that. I want to keep attacking until those final seconds when the whistle is blown, because the old cliche, the best form of defence is attack. If the ball's at the end of the pitch, you're not putting yourself under pressure. Of course, you can have counterattacks, but it's quite funny. It's kind of what the Spurs fans wanted last season, but now they've got it. It's scary and it's terrifying. It's, oh no, I don't know if I actually wanted that or not. And I do find that fascinating. And looking back at the kind of the goals that they've conceded as well, it's quite interesting because, yeah, a lot was made about the fact that they've conceded 8 late goals. It's more than anyone else in the Premier League. But actually, the bulk of those are either consolation goals for the other team when Spurs were already well ahead, or they were for 2 of them were the Chelsea game when they were already 2-1 down and Chelsea scored a couple of late ones. And the others, yeah, I think I read, looking at some of the stats, it's only 2 late goals that have actually cost them points out of those 8. Obviously, against a certain team at Goodison Park. And what was the other one? Was it Wolves, the other one, I think?
Yes, it would have been, wouldn't it? Yep.
Yeah. So it's just those 2 games, whereas at the other end of the pitch, they've actually scored 5 now in the 90th minute or later, which has brought in 8 extra points. So they've lost 5 from 2 late goals, but they've actually helped themselves to 8 extra points by scoring 5 at the other end. So it's kind of, it's one of those where it's balanced in the right way at the moment. And I would say that some of those late goals, they have been a bit of attention issues and not seeing out games and concentration. That is something that I think will be improved upon. It is still, this is the big thing that I think it's so easy to get away from. Spurs are a work in progress. They just really are. I think we've kind of all of us got a little bit carried away with some of the performances and how exciting they can be. And sometimes it just makes us forget. I'm lumping you in this as well, probably quite unfairly. But yeah, it's like they've only been, well, so 6 months of the season, 8 months or so of Postecoglou working with them. But then you look at Brighton and their patterns of play Saturday were just phenomenal, some of them. You know, the way they know exactly where they're going to be from one moment to the next. And that's not only because De Zerbi's had another, like, probably year or so on top that Postecoglou hasn't had, but also he was building upon the foundations, and he hates this, the Italian, whatever it said, but it's true. He was building on the foundations of not only Potter, but also a club that has that kind of style of football. That's the way it plays. So it was an easier, not so easier, because not that he's going to hear this, but a less friction, kind of heavy transformation. Whereas for Postecoglou, he was just, it's like night and day what he was trying to do compared to previous ways of playing at the club in the last 3-4 years or so. So, yeah, they are going to be a little bit of a step behind. But like you say, to still come out and beat the likes of Brighton, and with a goal that was top drawer as well, it just, it kind of fuels the progression. It fuels the development and the growth. And like I said earlier, makes them understand that if they play that way that he wants them to, because he was very unhappy at halftime. He was unhappy after the game. That's probably the most disappointed I've seen him after a win so far. He was...
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Really annoyed with the way they went about it in the first half and the way they came away from the football that he wants to play. And in his words, kept taking liberties on and off the ball, was how he put it. And you could see that. I mean, Bentancur, who we'll talk about, and his fitness and his sharpness, you know, there are a few times when Bentancur was not the Bentancur we know. You know, he was giving the ball away in daft positions, and it wasn't through trying to play a progressive fast ball either. It was kind of just dallying a bit with the ball in positions when he shouldn't be. And there were a few times when Postecoglou was going mad on the touchlines, but they got there in the end. And it's another positive moment for them. And they're back in the top four. And there's so much to work on in a good way as well.
Yeah, it was a slow start, it's fair to say. And Spurs could have been behind after 45 seconds. It was Mickey van der Ven caught on the ball. Brighton, it was Danny Welbeck who managed to, you know, go upfield, caught onto his left, and Guglielmo Vicario's, you know, made the really good save. For Brighton's first goal, I know a lot will probably be pointing fingers at Bentancur for losing it where he did. I don't think it's the best passes from Mickey van der Ven.
Vicario did the same to him as well soon after. Yeah, they're both dodgy balls. Yeah.
Just because the way he's facing, I don't think he can see what's coming over his left shoulder, and then behind him as well. And then for that one you mentioned with Vicario, Bentancur's stationary where he is. He's got a player behind him who's got the momentum just running and can just nick the ball off him. I don't think it was helped, but it was a penalty. Van der Ven did clip Welbeck, and good penalty from Gross as well. Dispatched it, but it could have been a lot worse for Spurs, given Mitoma had an opportunity as well. Vicario saved, but thankfully that wasn't the case come the full-time whistle.
Yeah, I mean, the Mitoma one, I would say it was from a tight angle.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say it was, you know, it could have been a more dangerous chance. I don't think in the end it actually was. But definitely, they had those early moments. And they just, the possession stats showed it. It was the closest I think it's been in a Spurs home game for a long time. I think it was something like Spurs had 52% of the possession. And I think they were only about 40-50 passes apart on the number of passes they made. Whereas we're used to Spurs being so far ahead in both possession and the pass count. And that showed what a quality team Brighton are. Even with De Zerbi not there, we didn't get, you know, the excitement on the touchline that we had last time he was at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. He was not only suspended, but I think he was also getting some kind of dental surgery or something back in Italy. So he was kind of missing entirely. Although there was some suggestion, I think, from his assistant that he was involved in the subs in the second half. But he was calling through a bit like I think Conte did on a couple of occasions when he couldn't be there. But going back to the triple change, the substitutions, which, you know, on the face of it, and it ended up being kind of a match-winning change eventually. But, you know, that's a big thing for Spurs, was being able to bring on Son, Johnson and Bissouma, which, you know, that's probably, I don't know, pushing £175 million worth of talent there, if not more, which is obviously not something that Postecoglou's had. I did feel that, because he was going to bring them on before the goal, and then Pat Matasar obviously scored a really nice goal, and he still brought them on. And I did feel like it disrupted their rhythm after that. I think they'd got into the little head of steam that had brought the goal, and they're a bit like, oh, okay. And like Kulusevski, who'd played quite well, had come off for that. And it, yeah, I did feel it kind of impacted them for a little while. They lost their shape. He was going to bring on Højbjerg and Skip, which went down, as you can imagine, on social media when I tweeted that they were both about to come on. And it was purely because the shape was lost. Brighton were running the midfield for that kind of 10, 15 minute or so period in that second half. And it was only because Udogie got, I think, wiped out by Romero, if I remember, in a sliding tackle in the box. So he ended up getting a little bit of an issue that brought him off, and Davies had to come on instead of Skip. Otherwise, you would have seen both midfielders come on. But it did help with the shape. They found a little bit of shape back to their midfield, especially. And it eventually led to the goal coming down that left-hand side. It was a funny game. It was one of those where Maddison said afterwards, like, he longs for a comfortable 3-0 win. It would just be amazing. But there's no denying that a late dramatic win like that does something for morale. It does something for the bond between the fans and the players, and it does something for the character and belief that regardless of being 5 or 6 minutes into added time, you've still always got a chance with this Tottenham team. And I think that is an important thing, and also an important thing about being at home, I guess, as well, and that stadium, and being a place where they're going to win more matches, they're going to even draw or lose, definitely. There were a few positives. One young man in the midfield for me stood out. And I'll let you kick off about Pat Matasar.
Yeah, I think it was always going to be the case. He was going to come back into the Tottenham team. I'd seen ahead of kickoff some, obviously, Spurs fans, and that had been making the predictions. And I think a couple had maybe left Sarr out and gone for Bissouma and Bentancur. And I always thought Sarr, for me, he's got to be one of the first names on the team sheet. And it's about 12 months ago now since we were at the San Siro to watch his midfield masterclass against AC Milan on his European debut for Spurs. And his growth over the past year has been incredible. He's gone from someone who was on the periphery of the team, and maybe in the January, you're thinking maybe could head out on loan again just because he's not getting a look in under Antonio Conte. And even though he performed so well in the San Siro, his minutes were limited after that. But Postecoglou's seen something in him, and he's given him a prime spot in this Tottenham team. And yeah, he's one of the first names on the team sheet. I think people were probably going for, once Bentancur's back fit, is Bentancur, Bissouma, Maddison. But you can't leave Sarr out. He's been absolutely magnificent and had a big, big say on the game with the equaliser. Really good run from him. I mean, there was a gaping hole in that Brighton back line, but fantastic ball from Dane Kulusevski to pick him out. He's obviously tried to square it to Richarlison. He's come back to him and he's finished it well. He just gives Spurs so much energy, dynamism as well. His box-to-box style, tactically as well, very good. He's just such a good player, and said it a few months ago on the podcast, he should be in the running for Premier League Young Player of the Year. Whether or not he is, I don't know, because I imagine it will be the usual names who'll be up for the top award. But given the way he's been playing this season, Pat Matasar's only going one direction in his career. He's going up and up. There's still so much more to come from him. I think he's just a fantastic, fantastic player.
He is. There's a reason they call him Star Boy within the club. That's his little nickname among the players, because they just all believe he's going to become a superstar. And, you know, Postecoglou, it was in pre-season. On the tour, we kind of very quickly got the sense that Postecoglou had absolutely fallen for him. He just loved everything about his game. I think he realised this young man fits the number eight role for me like a glove, although Postecoglou will tell you there's no such thing as number sixes and eights, and he doesn't want anyone talking about that sort of stuff, unless it's him. But yeah, Sarr is... he's incredible. There were so many times I was sat in the press box and he'd just be like, ooh, he kind of, that noise that we used to make with Tongi, he does a lot of those moments. And yeah, very different player to Tongi, of course. But yeah, he's going to be something special. And it's at both ends of the pitch as well. That's the beauty of it, is he's not someone that looks for the Hollywood moments, the big kind of passes or goal scoring moments, even though he did score. He's about the work ethic as well, and his drive and his kind of ridiculous, like the battery that he must have within him that allows him to just get up and down the pitch constantly, supporting. And you'll often notice that when someone's out of position, he'll drop into that position to help them out and cover for them. He's got a good cross on him as well. He links up well down the right with Porro or whoever the right winger would be at that time, or it's Kulusevski or Johnson. Very tactically intelligent, like you say. And yeah, he must be a dream to work with as a coach, because not only is he this kind of lovely, bubbly character that everyone gets on with, but he also gives everything in every training session. You're not going to see him just kind of his levels fall off because he thinks he's made it, or he just kind of wants to have a laugh with the lads kind of thing. He's just got this drive. And I think there was a nice little interview with him in the Matchday programme on Saturday, and it kind of, that really came across. He's had to kind of fight and battle throughout his career. Again, another player that Postecoglou will love because of that. He loves a fighter, and he's had to do that. And you know, I think we said it at the time, having the experience, while it wasn't great for Mets, but for him, of being in a team constantly kind of battling throughout that season when he went back on loan and eventually getting relegated, was good for him. It was really good for his development to know what kind of fight you have to have in a scenario like that. And you know, it was despite his best efforts that they went down, because he really gave them a shot in those last couple of months with some of his performances were superb.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But it served him well, and also the Conte season of not really playing, you know, having to fight behind the scenes to get noticed, and then battle when Postecoglou came and just show him what he could do. It all creates the player that you've got now, and he's still 21. That is obscene how much more growth he's still got to go as well. And he is very popular. And his interview was very much talking about the future and the real long term as well. He wants to stay here for as long as possible, was his words. He wants to win trophies at the club, wants to score more goals as well. He said he knows he's missed a few that he could have done better with. But he's done all right. I mean, he scored in back-to-back starts for Spurs, both at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium as well. He scores in big moments. So he scored against Man U, didn't he, early in the season as well. Yeah, he's a phenomenal young player. And like you said, young player of the year, he really should be up there. Absolutely. I don't see why not either. I mean, he's played 21 times in the Premier League this season. I think he's got 3 goals, 2 assists. But that's just like scratching the surface of what he brings to the pitch as well. I think I read that he's second only to Højbjerg in ball recoveries as well in the midfield. And it just shows how hard he works. Yeah, I think I'd be intrigued to see kind of as his English comes along, whether we get kind of more interviews with him actually with the media rather than the club stuff. Because, yeah, that's probably the next step for him in completely adapting to the new league and country. But he's doing absolutely fine as it is. He's doing very well.
And then after Sarr's goal, we had the triple substitution, Brendan Johnson, Son and Yves Bissouma coming off. And as we'd mentioned earlier in the pod, it did just seem to disrupt the rhythm of the game, and you're thinking straight after that goal, you just want them to keep going and keep going, because I'd probably say Spurs ended the first half well, the final 10 minutes or so, and then the start of the second half well. I thought some good play. Dejan Kulusevski was involved a lot more. Yeah. There's just times where you just want him to be a bit more selfish, a bit more decisive, especially in the first half. I think he had an opportunity to get a shot away on goal, but instead elected to pass the ball and it was cut out. And I think he was certainly more direct in the second half, and that obviously led to Sarr's goal. Kulusevski, I think, unfortunate to come off at that time, given how we'd done in those first 15 minutes of the second half. But, you know, in the end, the subs worked. And I think when you're just looking at the bench, it was a hell of a lot different to what it was like 2-3 months ago away at Man City. I'd done a piece on it after the game, basically saying that Man City, I think it was 3 youngsters, 2 goalkeepers on the bench, a couple of, you know, senior players, and very much all change against Brighton. And it was Brian Hill and Dane Scarlett who got left out. Got Giovanni Lo Celso to come back. You'd think he'll be back this week for Wolves with another week under his belt on the training pitch. And so potentially it might be like Oliver Skipp, someone like that, who's now gone to miss out. And it's such a crucial time in the season. You know, Man City and Liverpool have had this previously with their squads. They can just bring on these great players on from the bench because the squads are that good. And Spurs do look to be heading that way at the moment, but fingers crossed, it's just about keeping these players fit and firing, because unfortunately that's just not been the case for Spurs this season. But in terms of the squad now, I think Ange said in his pre-match, he's not seen the squad as healthy as it is at present.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I asked him after the game about just this ability to now have game-changing subs, which he just didn't have before. And he kind of harkened back to the start of the season. He said, we scored quite a few kind of late goals early in the season. We're able to change games towards the ends of matches because the bench was so much stronger then. And it is kind of a big part of his system and play as well, that players are going to be tired and he needs them to keep pressing high up the pitch. So to be able to, you know, bring on a whole load of subs from 60 minutes on is very much part of his kind of way of doing things. And yeah, he's not going to be a guy that, you know, we saw sometimes under Conte. Conte just didn't trust his bench, and he would sometimes bring on one, if maybe no subs. Whereas with Postecoglou, I'd imagine you'll mostly see him bring on 4 to 5 subs in every game. You know, he'll try to bring on all of them if he can, just to keep those fresh legs and to keep them doing. Because in his mind, he feels like, regardless of who the player is, as long as they're doing what he's telling them to do, the system will work. And if you have fresh legs in it, it will bring the results. So, yeah, it was interesting to see the 3 subs. And I did feel like, other than the Kulusevski one being a bit harsh on him, they were kind of the right subs to make. Werner had struggled a bit, I felt. His final ball was a bit inconsistent. There were a couple of nice little runs, but he gets to the end of it and then would kind of waste the opportunity. Again, early days for him. You know, you can't really kind of pile in on him because he's got to learn the system and everything. But definitely, there's going to be more to come from him on that part. And Bentancourt, look, I absolutely agree with you that I think some of those moments where he lost the ball in the first half were just as much to do with the ball to his feet, which wasn't great. But yeah, I don't think we can get away from the fact he's not the Bentancourt yet that we know. I think he will be. I see some people trying to claim that he's done, like finished. It's like, what has happened? What has happened to the world of football fandom? It's just crazy. You know, I wrote this in my piece, in my talking points after the game, is the sports science staff within the club made it kind of quite clear while he was coming back or towards the end of his rehabilitation from the cruciate ligament injury that you weren't going to see the best of him this season. You're just not. It's just the way those long-term, especially cruciate ligament injuries, work. And he would be back to his best, like real top form, probably next season, 24-25 season. And I think we all got a little bit overexcited about the Villa performance before he got the ankle injury, because he was phenomenal in that game. But I would say that aside, everything else, and I don't think you can also remove the fact that he's had another quite big injury straight afterwards and what that does to your body. But I don't think we can really get away from the fact that the guy has played just over 500 minutes in a year. You know, of course he's not going to be at the same level he was before. Of course his body's going to have to kind of re-educate itself, really, on doing a lot of the things he naturally would have done as a footballer. It's going to have to strengthen. He's going to have to get more confidence in certain things that he does. It's just a natural thing. But yeah, that did make me chuckle when I saw some people saying he was done. It was like, okay, that's what we're doing now. We're just ruling them out for the rest of their career now at whatever he is, 26, is he? It's just like incredible. No, he'll be a massive player for Spurs in the years to come. But I do wonder at the moment, it's a question to you, does he, for the next couple of games, maybe do a bit like what Brendan Johnson's done and just have to sit and watch the game from a different perspective and get his sharpness back through moments rather than starting? Or does Postecoglou kind of play him through it?
For me, he needs a bit of a breather on the bench. I think I said it on a couple of pods ago. I'd have probably dropped him down to the bench for the Everton game because he looked like he needed it. But
if you'd have dropped everyone for the Everton game, though.
Yeah, I probably would have done, but I think it's clear to see in his previous performances that he does need a bit of a rest because he's come back from two big injuries. And let's be honest, he's
come back too quickly, maybe as well. You know, very that's early.
That's what I was going to say. In terms of the ankle injury, at the time it was reported mid-February, which is the Saturday's game against Wolves. So he's back way ahead of schedule, but clearly he has been in a place to play, because otherwise Spurs medical staff would have said, no, you're back too early, we can't risk it. And is it a point now where he's just getting the minutes in the legs, which is only going to bode well for him going forward? But for me, I think he needs to be dropped down to the bench and say if Yves Bissouma had a bit more time back at Hotspur Way prior to the Brighton game, then I think Bissouma would have started. And I think we are going to see a bit more of Bissouma starting over the coming weeks, because the midfield three of Bissouma, Sarr and Maddison at the start of the season was brilliant for Spurs, won them a number of games, and we've not really seen the midfield click since then. So I think Bentancur will drop down to the bench. And yeah, there was a couple of times when he was maybe caught on the ball against Brighton. As I said, I don't think he was helped on a couple of occasions with the passes to him. But I think it also needs to be pointed out, he did have a role in the equaliser for Sarr's goal. It was really good footwork from him in the middle of the pitch with a couple of Brighton players around him. Yes, he might have got a lucky ricochet, but he managed to get through that, play it to Kulusevski, who's then taking the touch and played it to Sarr. And I think we've said it numerous times recently, you know, he's coming back from two big injuries. You know, he just needs time to recapture his previous levels. Very rarely you're going to see someone come back from a cruciate ligament injury and then just be able to replicate his form from, you know, 9 or 10 months ago. It doesn't happen. It's just about easing him back in. And yeah, I agree with you, like Andrew's probably done with Brendan Johnson in the past two home games. Just give him a breather, get him to see the game from a different perspective, and then give him some minutes towards the end.
Yeah, I mean, despite Ange not believing in sixes or eights, I do feel like Bentancur is a better eight than he is a six. I don't think it quite... he's good in the role, and you know, I think he's that good a player that he can make it absolutely fine, but I still don't think it's his natural position, whereas someone like Bissouma, I think, sits in that really nicely, and it kind of suits his play. And yeah, it's actually a nice little moment between Bissouma and Bentancur as they came out for the second half. I was watching, looking down from the press box. Bissouma was kind of really, really talking to him quite passionately as they were coming out of the tunnel. It felt like a real pep talk kind of chat. And as Bentancur went to the pitch and Bissouma went to the dugout, he like shouted at him. He was properly kind of trying to G him up as well, which is lovely because, you know, essentially Bentancur's playing in his position. He's playing in his role. Yeah, so he could be competitive and like you know, he could say, "Oh, you rubbish," like really knock his confidence. But I did think, and maybe that's what he saw, that in that first half, there were a few times when Benteke's head really went down. You could see him quite kind of affected by it. He wasn't moving kind of as dynamically as he does. And yeah, his head was just really kind of looking at the floor, really just maybe he feels like he's not quite where he was, and which is entirely understandable. But so I thought that was quite a nice sort of moment, G'ing him up. And he definitely was better in the second half. I'm not saying, you know, Basuma's the mastermind that did it. I'm sure it's a lot of Benteke's own work. But like you say, involved in the goal, and he was getting better as the half wore on. But yeah, I kind of feel like if we see Basuma, Sarr and Maddison next week against Wolves, it kind of makes sense. And that was the midfield trio that was so good for the whole start of the season. So yeah, I think Benteke just feeling his way back into the game and not feeling pressured that he has to start every match at this moment while he's still trying to rediscover his form isn't the worst thing in the world.
I think Basuma and Benteke are probably in a similar position at the moment, whereas they both need minutes because Basuma's participation at AFCON was extremely bit part, really. He had a bit part role to play for Mali, given everything what had happened. And then he's had a four-match ban for Spurs, and his form wasn't exactly brilliant before that. So, yeah, I think they're both in the position where they just need to be getting the minutes under the belt. But I think Ange might be edging a bit more towards Basuma for the Wolves game on Saturday. But we'll have to wait and see. Right, halfway through the pod, Ali, do you want to let everyone know about the benefits of using NordVPN?
Of course. The Golden Guest Talk Tottenham podcast is sponsored by NordVPN. Do you know what? I really like the fact that, you know, it could be just this really obvious thing that we, you know, podcasts have adverts, they have sponsors, they have stuff like that. But you and I both get so many messages from people saying that they signed up for NordVPN because they've heard us talking about it. And actually, it's really worked for them. You know, they've gone off on holidays or they've used it for work or whatever they've used it for. And they're like, where do you get people thanking us for that? It's like, that's very nice. We'd like them to thank us for the podcast and the things we're doing and talking about Spurs, but it's quite interesting, which people do, to be fair. But it's just quite nice that it doesn't feel like the kind of normal podcast sponsor relationship you get where people are just kind of reading our stuff and things like that. We actually get nice feedback from people kind of saying that it works for them. And I think that's important for us as well, because we want to be able to talk about things that kind of we believe in ourselves, and clearly other people believe in them too. So that is great to hear. And you know, it goes without saying, but I will, that NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world. And that means there's no buffering, no lagging, and you can stream your favorite shows from anywhere in the world without your bandwidth throttling. People will hear me saying that each week because it is something that I've done so many times with the service. I've used it on holidays. I've used it while I've been covering Spurs abroad, to be able to, whether it's set my device to being in a different country and, you know, being able to watch shows that I would watch at home that you normally can't on holiday because you have to, you know, be on their restrictions that come with their country. But you can set your device to thinking it's back in the UK. And not only that, but the outlay on a NordVPN subscription is cheaper for you in the long run because you could purchase, I don't know, flights or something like that from another country rather than booking them as if you're in the UK. And that can make it cheaper for you in the long run as well. So you are paying out for your NordVPN subscription, but you're saving money over time as well. There's a whole host of other benefits I could go into. There's a security aspect of it as well. If you're using public Wi-Fi, it can help you with that. So, you know, why not give it a go? Like I say, people have told us it works. So to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/goldguest. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support our podcast in doing so, which is great for us as well. And the link, if you want it, if you didn't get it after me just saying it, it is also in the episode description box with this podcast.
Right, we've just discussed Rodrigo Benteke's performance. He made way after 62 minutes against Brighton, one of the players who came on. Son Heung-min, fair to say, Spurs have missed Sonny over the past month or so. And when you want someone to stand up in the big moments, he did exactly that. Ange Postecoglou, you know, waxing lyrical about him after the game, made it clear that the ball might look a bit simple for the one he played across goal for Brendan Johnson, but that's what world-class players do. I think they make those moments look simple. And it was on about the big, big players delivering in those clutch moments. And Son did that. It was a fantastic ball. And I think that's exactly what Ilha wanted, especially after such a disappointing end to the Asian Cup for him with South Korea.
Yeah, I mean, you said that Spurs missed Son, and I absolutely agree. But I also think Son's missed Spurs. I do. I think it's been such a difficult time for him with Korea, and obviously South Korea's involvement in the Asian Cup, and there's question marks over the team, Klinsmann, the way they played. I don't think there's been any question marks over Sonny, to be fair. I think he's led them as a captain, and I think he got 3 goals and assists as well in the tournament. You know, just like he always does, he just takes the weight of the burden, I guess, of expectation on his shoulders when he's playing for Korea, where maybe when he plays for Spurs, there's a little bit more kind of sharing out of that. And that's not to say South Korea don't have some terrific players as well as him, but you feel like he is the figurehead. He is the man that everyone looks to. So I do think coming back to Spurs, it is a bit like, kind of thing. You could just relax that little bit more. Although, you know, he's obviously the captain of Spurs. He's got a big role to play as this season goes on. But yeah, I do feel like it's a very kind of taxing time for him sometimes when he's on international duty, because there's so much focus on him and what he does. And to be honest, he came on, and I think Postecoglou said afterwards, if I remember correctly, that he could have started him if they'd really wanted to, but he just felt like it was too soon. You know, he'd only played on Monday night. He'd had a long flight, got back to England, I think, late on Wednesday. Thursday had a recovery session at Hotspur Way. So he only really had a training session before the game on the Friday. And that wouldn't have been an intense one because it's the pre-match training session. So he hasn't really, you know, hadn't done much at all. So it did make sense to use him late in the game. And, you know, what a sub to be able to bring on. It took him a little while to kind of make an impact, as it did for all the subs. But my goodness, when it came, it really did. And I think it was what he needed. It's been a difficult time for him to come straight back and win an assist. And it was a real kind of captain's role, wasn't it? It was just providing a goal for a player in Brennan Johnson, who we'll chat about in a moment, that needed it, really needed that kind of the perfect ball as well. Because, you know, Brennan Johnson misses that late chance. If the ball isn't as perfect as it was, it creates problems for Brennan Johnson more than it does for Sonny. He was there for him. And you could see what it meant to him. He got roared afterwards, Sonny, as soon as that ball went in the net. It was like almost an outpouring of every frustration he's had in the last couple of weeks. He did, obviously, interviews afterwards where he spoke about how difficult it's been coming back after. And you know how Sonny's like, he kind of felt like he let his country down despite the fact that he really hadn't. And he's just a very emotional guy and just a brilliant player. And it was interesting, Postecoglou made a point about him afterwards. He was asked about, you know, whether he is seen as being world-class by everyone. And he made a point, I think maybe was taken slightly in the wrong spirit back in South Korea from what I've seen from kind of social media. He said maybe the nation who he plays for plays a part in him not being seen as world class. And I think people took that as a pop at the Korean FA, as Klinsmann and everything, because there is a lot of frustration right now in Korea about, despite the fact they got to the semi-finals, about the way that they played. And I think in that semi-final didn't even have a shot at goal or on target. But I think what he meant more than anything, and this has been said about players from other countries as well, that maybe only the players that come from like a football powerhouse of a country that has claimed World Cups after World Cups, the likes of Brazil, Argentina, Spain, Italy, maybe their players can be seen as world class. But sometimes players from other countries who aren't going to be constantly winning international trophies, maybe they don't get that same respect. And I think that comes back to Postecoglou himself. I think that's something within himself as an Australian. He feels that he's never been given that full respect that he deserves for all the trophies he's won over his career. So I think that's more what he was saying, that South Korea, while got a lot of talented players and they've won trophies in the past, they're not a, you know, a World Cup challenger each year, each time that comes around. And it doesn't have one of the biggest leagues, because I think England benefits from that. I think English players can be seen as world-class because of the Premier League and the power that that has in the game. Whereas I think that's what he was trying to say. But yeah, Sonny's just a remarkable player. And as Postecoglou said, having a world-class player back for the final run-in is huge for Spurs. And he's going to, I mean, what's he got now? He's got 18 goal contributions in 21 matches in the Premier League. 12 goals, 6 assists. I wouldn't bet against him having 30 goal involvements by the end of this season. I wouldn't put it past him. 12 in the next, was it 14? I think he could do that. If he gets a couple of like braces in a few games or a couple of assists, yeah, I think he could be up there. I think he'll get to 20 goals for the season as well. Yeah, terrific player. Just loves Sonny. Everyone loves Sonny, don't they? He's just his whole character is infectious around the club as well.
Yeah, well, rewind the clock back 2 years ago when Spurs were in Champions League contention, the amount of goals Son scored in that running. Because he'd just come from nowhere to win the Premier League Golden Boot. I think everyone thought it was going to be Salah winning it. So, you know, he's a big player for the big moments, and you certainly won't put past him contributing some big, big goals for Spurs in the running, because I think they're certainly going to need it with Villa on the tails. Spurs are a million miles off, you know, Liverpool, City and Arsenal either. We will talk about that in a bit because there's been some interesting comments. Let's say, but in terms of Spurs, it was just great to see Brendan Johnson scoring the winner. Second successive game he's been on the score sheet at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. It's been a frustrating start to his Spurs career for someone who cost, you know, near enough 50 million. I think a lot of fans probably expected him to be on it right from the go and contributing for Spurs, as he had done, you know, countless times in his few seasons at Nottingham Forest in the first team. And really, really good for him. Hopefully it does give him that confidence boost going into the next few weeks. And I'm sure what probably was frustrating for him was playing so well in those 45 minutes against Brentford and then struggling the following week against Everton. Hopefully this moment against Brighton lifts his confidence up. I'd have liked to have seen him celebrate a bit more. I mean, last-minute winner. Sure, obviously it was bedlam inside Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and there's nothing better than the last-minute winner in football, but obviously just playing it cool. But the Spurs players certainly surrounded him pretty quickly. Rada Dragosin, who was a new substitute on the day, he ran half the length of the pitch to join in those celebrations. And Pat Matasar, who was certainly tiring towards the final few minutes of his game time, he still had enough energy in the tank as well to make the run. And the celebrations were brilliant. Really, really good. And like I said, hopefully just does give Johnson an extra boost in confidence.
Yeah, celebrations were mad. You had a doggy with an ice pack on his knee ran up the pitch as well. The Dragosin thing was lovely. That, for me, shows a player who, you know, might have thought he'd come into the club and play as much as he had at Genoa, but he hasn't yet because of those kind of other players in the role. But it just shows how already kind of part of the club he feels, that he can do that, the sprint up there to be part of it all. And, yeah, who were the other ones I noticed as well? Højbjerg did that kind of weird... Like he was almost doing a knee slide that didn't quite, and it ended up looking like he was proposing in front of him, but I like that. Vicario did a knee slide in his own box. Madison was just so shattered he fell to the floor on his knees, platoon style. Johnson, to be fair, said afterwards that he was just so kind of knackered like by the run that he was like, oh, I didn't even know how to celebrate. And he ended up doing, apparently, it's a hand kind of gesture that the wrestler Jeff Hardy does. Brighton fans took it as him having a pop at João Pedro, who did similar when he scored at the Amex against Spurs. But apparently Jeff Hardy is his favourite wrestler, so it was just like a little nod to him. But yeah, it made him kind of look very cool and calm and collected. And look, maybe it is also a little part of what he's had to go through in recent weeks. It is, you know, people haven't been particularly pleasant to him. Let's be honest. You know, he's had to limit the comments on his Instagram posts. He said, you can't now comment on Brennan Johnson's Instagram posts unless he follows you, just because of the abuse he was getting. And, you know, people have, I'm not going to turn it into a long rant because people have heard me go off about abusing young players or any players, let's be honest, but especially young players on social media. I don't understand where the benefit lies in that. I don't get it. I feel like it says more about the people doing it than the person that they're trying to abuse. And when you're 22 years old, do you think that G's them up? Do you think that's a good thing? Oh, they'll love the fact that I'm calling them every name under the sun and whatever. No, it hits them. It kind of impacts them. And he's admitted himself, his form dropped and he struggled a little bit. And everyone just forgets for a moment that, yeah, he came with a big fee, but he's 22 years old. That fee really was for the potential and the long term and what he can do for this club over the years to come. He's got all of the kind of the makeup to be something special, but he's got to learn how to use it. And that's what Postecoglou and Ryan Mason are both working on. You know, that goal was born of the work he's done with Postecoglou and Mason on the training pitch and getting him at that back post for every cross. That's exactly what they've been doing with him. He's got incredible pace, but I still think the hamstring injury against Arsenal has made him doubt his hamstring slightly. I still don't think he flies at defenders quite as much as he's capable of doing and was doing for Forest. There's so much more to come from him. And I do think he also suffered from being a little bit out of form and low in confidence, but having to play through it because they had no one else. I think that's a big thing. I don't think it's any shocking coincidence that Postecoglou in these last two home games has taken him out of the action, let him see the game from a different perspective, and then brought him in the second half and said, right, you've seen what we need, go do it. Shock horror, he scored two goals. He scored a goal in both of those appearances. Whereas before, when he was just kind of getting run into the ground, despite not playing or feeling at his best, yeah, he wasn't able to do that. So, I mean, he's still got, I think I looked at it, 4 goal involvements in his last 7 games in the Premier League. That's absolutely fine. That's great for a young player who's kind of adapting to a very different club, very different system, a big step up with the extra pressure that brings. That's fine. I feel like, a bit like with Bentancur, but for differing reasons, I think next season you'll see the best of Brennan Johnson. As he, you know, he hasn't even had a pre-season with Spurs. He hasn't been indoctrinated into the entire Postecoglou way yet. It's a bit like, you know, when we're laughing at people saying Bentancur's finished. I've seen people saying that Johnson should be sold already. It's like, what are you talking about? He's 22 years old. You've got to cut him a little bit of slack because of his age. But when you say that, you get people saying, yeah, but look at a doggy, look at Saar, look at Van de Ven. That's great. Thanks for pointing out 3 young players who are also incredibly talented, who just happen to have adapted. That's not the norm. That just is a very special kind of thing about those players that they've able to do that. You know, most other young players take a bit of time. They're all at different stages of their developments and journeys. I've just realised this has turned into a rant, which I said I wasn't going to do. It just winds me up. It's probably one of the things that winds me up the most about football fandom. It's the knocking of young players when they're so far from being the fully formed product. I'm going to step away from the rant now because I'm going to just make myself angry and angrier. But yeah, big moment for Brennan Johnson. Hope he takes a real confidence boost from it. And I'm pretty sure he'll still have plenty more goal involvements to come over the rest of this season.
Yeah, right. You might want another rant now because we're going to move on to top 4 talk. Yes. Spurs are in 4th after this round of games, helped out by Manchester United getting a late 2-1 win over Aston Villa at Villa Park on Sunday evening. Gary Neville, he was in the Sky Sports studio after the game, and basically he was mentioning about Villa and Spurs in this battle for Champions League football. Manchester United have come into the equation now, 3 successive wins. I think they're only 6 points off Spurs. Neville was saying, from a Spurs perspective, they would have preferred Villa to win rather than Manchester United. Thoughts on that?
Who did Gary Neville used to play for? I sometimes forget.
Manchester United, apparently. Oh, that's all he talks about.
I heard that. I was watching the game and I was just like, what? Like, where has that come from? Why in any world would Spurs have preferred to drop out of the top four to enable Man United to lose a game? Oh, it was, my whole thought was right from the start was that I think, you know, Spurs need United to win this. Look, this could go completely wrong and United may go on a run and they may end up kind of finding a way back into the top four. But for me, if you're the team in fourth place, you don't want the team that could leapfrog you to win their game. That just makes no sense. And what I would say about United, they are just as capable of losing a load of games as they are winning in the fixtures ahead. Because, you know, before yesterday's game, at Villa Park, Spurs had scored 20 more goals than United this season. I mean, that's ridiculous. That just shows how much they struggle to score goals, United. I think they'd got 31 and Spurs had 51 goals scored. Obviously, they got another couple yesterday. But yeah, I don't think, and this is very much will be the Postecoglou way, they shouldn't fear anyone. They shouldn't worry about a team in sixth who started the weekend 6 points behind them and now are still 6 points behind them, being like the thing they should be worried about. This no, be worried about Villa. Villa are having a terrific season. Villa are playing really well, and Villa can beat anyone on their day. They're unfortunate, I felt yesterday. They had a lot of opportunities to kind of put that game to bed, which they didn't. If you ask me right now, who I'm more worried about, it would be Villa than Man United in the top four. That may change as the weeks go on. If United can get a run, have they won? Is it three in a row?
They've won three on the bounce in the Premier League. Late winner at Wolves, 3-0 against West Ham, and then yesterday at Villa. Yeah,
yeah. So they're absolutely on a nice little bit of form. But you know, Spurs haven't lost many games in recent months. Spurs have only lost 5 out of the 24 matches they've played in the Premier League. You know, this isn't some struggling for confidence team that we're talking about. And I'm sure Spurs are looking up rather than down. You know, they would have wanted Arsenal to not absolutely obliterate West Ham. They would have been kind of thinking of catching Arsenal. I don't think they're looking behind them at the team in sixth. I just thought that was a really weird comment. And it's like, isn't it funny how you can look at Spurs, United being still in exactly the same position behind the Spurs that they were in terms of being 6 points behind, yet suddenly a top four contenders after that result. Whereas Spurs started the weekend 7 points behind Liverpool and finished at 7 points behind Liverpool. But no one's talking about Spurs being in the title race. You know, it's just, apart from the supercomputer that gave them a 0.011% chance of winning the title, which I don't think I've seen Postecoglou as tickled by anything in a press conference as he was by the thought of a supercomputer. He loved that idea. Even said he kind of came back to it, did a callback at the end of the press conference saying, you know, hey, we're not out of it until the supercomputer tells us so. So we're going to keep on playing this season. I loved it. It was so good. But yeah, I found that all very strange. I mean, I'll put you on the spot now. Where do Spurs finish at the end of this season?
Below Manchester United now.
Manchester. Just so that they can play clips of this. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I think they'll be playing in the Champions League next season. Where they finish in the table, I don't know. I think they'll be top four, but there could be a situation, you know, come May where fifth ends up getting the Champions League place as well,
yeah.
Because of the changes what are taking place next year. Now, I think Spurs will be top four, and let's be honest, a couple of weeks ago, no one was really touting Manchester United for a Champions League finish. I think everyone thought it's five teams battling for four places. And from a Tottenham perspective, I agree with you. You're looking up the table. Yeah. Spurs have been mentioned potentially in the title race. You're looking at Liverpool, Arsenal, Man City and Villa. Ahead of, you know, the game Villa Park yesterday, United were 9 points behind Spurs. Why on earth are you looking behind you? You want them to progress as a club. You're looking ahead. I don't get that. And let's be honest as well, Villa could have won that game. I thought once Douglas Luiz equalised, Villa would have gone on to win. And then what's Gary Neville gone to say in the studio? It'll just be the usual rubbish about United when they lose. The culture's all wrong. The team's not good enough. There'll be questions about Erik ten Hag, but it's always the same with United. When they'll get, what, 2-3 wins on the bounce, it's like United are back. But there's been so many false dawns at Old Trafford since Fergie left. And as you'd mentioned, United could quite easily go and lose the next game away at Luton. They're just not consistent. But credit to them, they've got three very good results in the past three games, especially the one at Villa Park. They might fancy the chances of Champions League football, but it's all going to come down to consistency, which is something what's just not happened for them over the course of this season and the back end of last season as well. I think they've got themselves into a really, really good position come like January, February, and then league form just totally dipped in the end. But from a Tottenham perspective, you're just looking up, not behind you.
Yeah, and look, it absolutely was a good result from yesterday. Against one of the league's kind of formed teams. They went away and got a good result, but it was also a good result for Spurs. It was. And the Spurs, you know, very much on paper, because anything could still go wrong in the next couple of weeks. But Spurs have just won what, on paper would be the toughest of these three home games in a row they've got kind of in the weeks ahead. So, you know, you then got Wolves and Palace, and of course, both teams capable of doing something at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Wolves certainly have caused Spurs problems there in the past. But if Spurs can pick up a run of wins at home, you know, they're not even looking anywhere near behind them. You know, they will have created a gap behind them, I think. I think that's all that United have done, really, at this point. I think, because that's why I think it's premature. Is all they've done is really stop themselves being cast utterly adrift. They may go on a run and they may kind of close that gap a little bit. But right now, yeah, I think I predicted pre-season third for Spurs. I'm maybe hovering around fourth now, only because, annoyingly for Spurs, of course, Arsenal just feel like they're in a groove and they're not letting games get past them at the moment. They're kind of doing what they need to do. And then, yeah, going to West Ham, who were just abysmal as that first half especially went on, and getting six goals, that's a big kind of statement win for them. Obviously, you know, for some of these clubs at the top, the European football returns, and that's going to play its part as well. Just at a time when Spurs have got their strongest squad available for them, I think that's going to be an interesting part to play in what's to come. United in Europe still in any form?
No, I think they finished bottom of the Champions League group, so they're completely out.
Okay, so they'll be in a position where they'll feel that they can put everything into these remaining games as well. But yeah, I still feel like Spurs are well placed for a good run in, and squad wise, adapting to what Postecoglou's asked of them, they'll be stronger and stronger for knowing more about his demands. And I did have a little bit of a chuckle at that. It did feel very much like the whole "man, you're a huge club, let's build them up" thing. And you know, like we said, they've got enough young, talented players there to do something. And they've got enough players who know what to do in big moments to do something. But I just felt it was very premature to kind of go along those lines for me.
Yep. I'm sure we'll come back to this podcast in late May when Manchester United have won the Premier League.
Exactly. Incredible. Won every game for the remainder of the season.
But Spurs now, a couple of home games on the agenda. You'd fancy them to beat Wolves and Palace. If they can get that momentum going, then they're going into an away game at Aston Villa after the Crystal Palace game. And I think Villa have Fulham away next, which is a bit of a tricky one. Fulham are decent at home, and then it's Luton away for them as well. So potentially could be some drop points there. And I think Villa are going to be in European action at some point, whether or not it's this month, it'll be early March, if not in February. So, yeah, all Tottenham can do, just concentrate on yourselves. Just keep looking at those teams ahead of you. Don't bother looking behind you. And then, yeah, just keep getting those wins and we'll see where Spurs finish come the end of the season.
I'm just looking at Villa's games. Are they definitely still in Europe? Oh, that might only be
Premier.
Sorry, that's only Premier League matches I'm looking at. That's why. They play on... I've got it here somewhere. No, I haven't. Why am I not getting them? Oh, they must be. I must be just looking at Premier League games. But, yeah.
I think for Villa in the Conference League, I think they won the group. And I think it's a case of who finished second or third in the Conference League played those dropping down from the Europa League. So there's like a preliminary knockout round game in February. And then Villa will be in the draw for the March fixtures.
That'll be it. Thank you for bringing logic to this. Yes, that'll be exactly why it's not in their fixture list. And we're still talking about fixture list. We're still waiting to see when the Spurs game at Chelsea is going to be. I mean, it hasn't actually been postponed yet, has it? It still sits within the fixture schedule, which is a bit weird, bearing in mind, was it 2 days later they're playing in the Carabao Cup final, Chelsea?
Well, Liverpool, I think their game for the Carabao Cup final weekend has been brought forward. I think they're playing that like the Tuesday or the Wednesday night now. But there's still nothing with the Chelsea-Tottenham one. I did a piece on it a few weeks ago. I think there's only two free midweek slots in the calendar. I think there's one between Tottenham's games against Arsenal and Man City, and then between the penultimate game and the final game of the season. Because what happens is there's a lot of free midweek slots for Tottenham and Chelsea because they're not in European action, but UEFA don't really want Premier League games taking place on the same day as any UEFA competition, because that means all eyes are then off their competitions. So, yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. I reckon it'll be between the Arsenal and Man City game in April.
God, crikey. That just makes that run just even worse. Because, I mean, there were some suggestions that it might be like sooner than that. But, I mean, how much notice can you give? You know, you can't just like dump it on the fans suddenly and say, oh, by the way, now it's going to be that day. Although, you know, with the way sometimes these fixtures are arranged and the ridiculous kickoff times and days, you never know. But, it would be nice to kind of get that in the diary and see what time the next Pochettino-Postecoglou clash comes.
Yeah. Right, we'll leave that for today's latest episode of Golden Guest Tot Tottenham. As ever, thank you for listening, and just keep with us at football.london for all your latest Tottenham news. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/goldguest. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support our podcast. The link is in the episode description box.